Welcome to Resting Witch Face, your one-stop haunt for all things spooky, bitchy, and more. I'm Bailey Bennett, and I didn't tell Grant we were starting.
No, she did not. And I am Grant Jacoby. And here we are. We have started. We have begun. It is happening.
Happy November.
Happy November.
How has this happened?
I don't know, but honestly, October was like the longest month of ever.
Yeah. September was like a blink, and then October lasted forever.
I rehearse once a week for the dance project I'm working on. Like every week we when we get together, it's always kind of like, oh my God, it's only been a week. There's only been like 45 like horrible disasters
so
in
much
our country. Speaking of which, I believe this episode is coming out on November 6th.
Is it?
I think so.
Oh my God, fuck.
So if you're listening to this, it's a very, very important day.
Yes.
Please,
honestly,
do whatever you can to get out and vote.
Turn this podcast off and get out there if you need to.
Or put this podcast on in the car or in your headphones while you are like heading to your local polling place. It's just like, I think and I just want to be like very brief about this because I don't, you know, we talked about this before that, you know, we're not trying to be like a political podcast, but we're living in a time where you can't not be political. Yeah. And unfortunately, there was a lot of apathy with the 2016 election where I think an unfortunate number of people and a lot of people that I know that are very, very smart either just like chose not to vote or kind of just like voted as an afterthought. And we're living in a time where it's, There's way too much at stake for to not vote.
Completely.
The rights of women, the rights of the LGBTQ community, the rights of Muslims and of immigrants, and just like basically, if you're not a straight white male, your freedoms and liberties are at risk. So, not to be like too fucking like panic about it, but I just think that it's you know,
this is a really, really big deal, and I think we've been waiting for this day for 2 years, and now is the time to fucking show up. And even if you live in a state that always goes the way that you want it to go, that it doesn't matter. Just get out there anyway. You never know, and every fucking vote counts.
Exactly. And
I think that's all we'll say about that.
Yeah,
it is important. I have a great listener email to share today for a hate that scared the shit out of me. As much as Election Day is fucking scaring the shit out of me, this is a different kind of spooky. And let me just fucking say, this email is from a listener named Elizabeth, but everyone calls her Sunny. Okay. And I just want to say, this is like the most beautifully written ghost haunting tale I've ever read. It's the prose really is stunning. So she says, she also gave me some great advice about clenching my teeth. So like,
wow, Sunny, living up to your name.
Yeah.
With the brightness and cheer you bring to Bailey's life.
So okay, I'm going to start now. So I'm a California girl through and through. I've lived all over, but I'm always called home. During this particular incident, I was living in my favorite city, Oakland. My roommate / BFF, DeAndrea, and I had a sweet little apartment, DeAndrea. Not DeAndrea. And I had a sweet little apartment at the top of the Bottoms, sandwiched between West Oakland and Ghost Town. I'm sure you've heard we have earthquakes in California. What? What's that? Now, being a true Californian, I mostly just laugh at all my transplants. A cacophony on Facebook, losing their shit over a 2.5. When I was a child, we would have weekly drills. Teachers tucking students under tables and into doorways. We know now that that's a pretty dangerous way to deal with the shaking, so they don't teach it anymore. That didn't stop me from waking up in the last of the shutter to find myself standing in my doorway. DeAndrea hollered at me from her room, Sunny Bunny, you okay? We converse in the kitchen. We convene in the kitchen, giggling about how I sleptwalked to bad programming into my doorway. We giggle about how everyone will have nothing else to discuss the following day, but where they were when the shaking went down, when the tiny shaking began. I just made that up. It was lighthearted and joyful. The energy was good. At least it felt that way at first. And so we head back to bed. My room felt chillier than it was, even 15 minutes before. I recall throwing on a sweater, packing a bowl, and lying down. The moment my head hit the pillow, something happened. The weight of the room changed. The density, the pressure became insurmountable. I was laying on my bed, on my side, when I felt someone, something, settle in with me. First, it was a weight beside me, then it laid down, wrapped its arms around me. It was then the sinking started. It was as if I was being enveloped by my bed. And then all of a sudden, the noise, louder than I have ever heard. It was like I was inside of a wind turbine tunnel. My blanket elevated off of my body, and there was a pulling near my feet. I felt like I was being pulled up by my ankles off of the bed, but my body wasn't actually moving. I was, though. I have dealt with sleep paralysis for years, so I went through my protocol, tried clenching my fists and screaming. It took every effort I had, but I managed to fight myself awake, though I had never been asleep. I forced myself out of bed with little control of my body, and soon onto my feet with a wild rage, so much screaming that never left my lips. And he was there, standing in the corner of the room, a darkness. And then I was down again, lying on my back in the wind tunnel with the pulling from my ankles and the dread, the darkness just over my right shoulder, drowning me in heaviest sounds. It was so loud, I knew that I could not submit. I could not see what was on the other side of this experience. This happened over and over again. I could not physically leave the room. I was not asleep, though it felt like I was in and out of a dream state. I was in and out of this world. The pull was relentless. I wept and screamed, and Deandra, just down the hall, maybe 30 feet away, heard none of it. Morning took an eternity to arrive, and when it did, the weight in the room left, and I lay there on the floor, exhausted and terrified, my room practically dismantled. It was weeks before I had the courage to regale anyone with the tale. But when I did, I spoke with my friend Marks, who is like genius smart. Mm-hmm. Her eyes were wide and she was almost excited when she said, "Holy shit, that sounds like an out-of-body experience, but you were fighting." I told her about the weight, the dark figure, the sounds. We did our research and it supported her claim. We settled on it not being an organic event, though. We couldn't identify the figure, the darkness, but we are confident that it was responsible for the event. I spoke about it once again to a friend who claimed to be a clairvoyant. I mostly think she's just full of shit, though. Oh. She wouldn't even discuss it. She couldn't. She just squinted at me, then stared for a long time. The look on her face was not great. And then she said, in a voice that didn't even seem to be her own, "Never let them take you." I have had other events, but this one took the cake. I've seen ghosties and been given glimpses into the future or gifted knowledge that I cannot explain. But this was the first time that I was nearly abducted by a non-human and had a clear and full recollection of it. I regularly dream lucidly. I love traveling in the night or in meditation, but that weight, the air, like warm molasses, I will never forget that, or the sounds. That's the end.
My God.
And then she's like, and now let me tell you about Bailey's clenching teeth.
I mean, it sounds a lot like sleep paralysis. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And my one experience with sleep paralysis. Right. But also like, holy shit.
Like, that is so much. And like, that's an incredible experience. But also, I can't imagine.
I wouldn't want that.
That's so terrifying. Because it sounds like she also has experienced sleep paralysis. And she mm-hmm. knows what it feels like. But it like wasn't that. I don't know. God.
That's terrifying.
That's such a good one. Thanks for sharing. Thank you for sharing that.
And thanks, Sunny.
And thank you for writing it so beautifully, Sunny Bunny.
Who's your badass bitch of the week?
Well, okay. So this is like the corniest thing that I'm ever going to do.
Good.
But as we've talked about, there's a lot going on politically right now. And there's a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of people that we could be celebrating every week on this podcast, clearly. And like we were saying, we don't want to get too political on this podcast, but it also feels like hard to ignore how much fucked up shit is going on. So all I want to say this week is that instead of sharing a badass bitch, I'm just going to encourage everyone on our podcast to identify a badass bitch in their own lives and someone that they don't maybe talk to enough or don't thank for being there or don't say that they love them enough, and just reach out to that person, whether it be on the phone or get coffee with them. You know, spend some time with them, spend some time talking to a friend that you really love. And I already did it today. I already talked to my grandma on the phone 3 times. As I've said before, she's the baddest ass bitch in my life, the kindest fucking woman I've ever met. And I don't talk to her enough. And I don't talk to a lot of people, a lot of women in my life enough. And if your baddest bitch is not a woman, that's totally fine as well. Anyone in your life that you feel like you deserve more of your time and your attention, I just encourage you to do that this week. And I think that's the best thing that we can do when everything seems to be going horribly wrong, is just let people know that we love them and we care about them.
That's so nice. What a genuine, like, kind moment.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's great. I think that I think the world needs more kindness right now. And I hope that you listeners know that when we say we don't like to get political, it's not because, it's not that we're apathetic about the current situations in our country. I think it's more that if we get into a tangent of it, it's just going to become like,
there's too much. We can't possibly touch on it all. And I don't think that, as much as we want to comment on it, I don't think that people come here necessarily to hear more about that. I think this is an escape for a lot of people. I hope that it is. And we want to keep things fun. It's an escape for me as well. So know that we're not ignoring a lot of these things. It's just that we want to bring you something else to enjoy.
Exactly. Well, I do have a baddest bitch of this week,
great.
Which is, and I'm sure that some of you have been waiting for this one. It's Jamie Lee Curtis, because...
Hell yeah, it is.
We got a lot of write-ins for our Q&A episode about our thoughts on the new Halloween film. Mm-hmm. Bailey has not seen it.
I haven't seen
it. I have. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to wait to do it until like a little bit of time, or sorry, I wanted to wait to like give my thoughts about it until a little bit of time has passed to let more people see the movie in case I'm not really going to spoil anything. For those of you that asked my thoughts, I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. Was it my favorite Halloween sequel? No. Was it my least favorite? Absolutely not. I think it was a little overhyped. But I was very excited to see, I feel like the people that, you know, people like John Carpenter and obviously Jamie Lee Curtis that were involved in the original film, seeing them back. And I think it was handled well and it was directed well. There was something missing. And I think that I mentioned this when we first started talking about the remake, or since it's a direct sequel to the original, they've eliminated all of the other sequels in terms of canon. And while I think that that was a really cool idea and really refreshing, they've done that before with Halloween H2O, which eliminated 3, 4, 5, 6 and just went straight from Halloween 2. So it just kind of felt a little bit like, there's just like so much history and so much intrigue for me within the mythology of it all. So it kind of felt like it was a little bit, there was something flat about it and something a little bit lifeless.
Yeah.
I was just like, wasn't that scary? But.
Interesting.
I thought that Jamie Lee Curtis was excellent in it. And I've been reading, she's been doing a lot of press about the film. And a number of things just like really stuck out to me. One was the fact that she said in the past when she's done Halloween sequels, it's simply because she needed the money. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a great way just to like get a nice fat paycheck. Mm-hmm. And however, like she did this film because like it was a labor of love and like she really wanted to do it and wanted to be involved and really believed in the creative team and the script. And specifically, she said she really wanted to do it because it portrayed a woman with PTSD. And she thought it was very important to show this woman who's not only a survivor, but is a fighter and who fights back. And fights back she does. And the film kind of restructures or kind of we visit Laurie Strode as kind of this like survivalist, basically has been spending the past 40 years kind of shut off from the world, is estranged from her family, and is just like waiting for Michael Myers to come back and get her.
Oh, fuck.
It's just a really interesting take on the character. And also I think what's really important is that it's like the three leads are three generation of women. So you have Jamie Lee Curtis.
Nice.
You have Judy Greer playing Laurie Strode's daughter, Karen. And then you have Andy Matichak playing Allison Strode, the kind of third generations. And it's just kind of like this, like, as I said, three generations of badass bitches fighting back against this, like, fucking lumbering dickwad who likes to kill people. So, and because of that, and I was, like, thinking about that, and also the film was doing incredibly well. It was, I think, like, the second biggest October opening of a film ever.
Oh, my God.
With, like, over $70 million. And it's the highest opening film of a woman with the lead character being a woman over 55.
Oh, my God.
It's a huge accomplishment.
I love that.
I really hope. I hope that it doesn't, like, tarnish the brand. But, like, I hope that they continue making more sequels. And I hope that they continue to, like, use this positive spin and, like, continue Laurie's story. And so for my story this week, I kind of was thinking about that and thinking about women who survive. And we talked about this a couple weeks ago when you did the story about different women who survived. And this is a story that I've always, like, been really curious about. I knew that it existed, but I didn't really know much about it.
Okay.
And are you familiar with the TV show Surviving Evil?
No.
It's an investigation discovery show that was on from 2013 to 2015. Okay. Only had three seasons. And it's kind of like if I Survived met Unsolved Mysteries.
Okay.
So there's, like, a lot of reenactments, but it's being told by the people who
amazing
lived through the ordeal.
I love this.
And the show was hosted by none other than a fave of our podcast, Charisma Carpenter.
Shut the fuck up.
And the first episode is about her survival story.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. I had no idea.
So this is a true, this is, like, as close to a transcription as I've ever done of anything. So it's episode one of Surviving Evil called Terror Beach.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. If you don't know who Charisma Carpenter is, first of all, get the fuck out. Second of all, go watch Buffy at this very moment, seasons one through three. Thank you very much.
Yes. So a little bit more context. So Charisma Carpenter portrayed Cordelia Chase on the first three seasons of Buffy and the first four and change seasons of Angel. And she's been a ton of other.
Also in Veronica Mars.
She's in Veronica Mars. She makes a brief appearance in Scream Queens. She's just been, like, a hardworking actor that's been around a lot, and she's gorgeous, and she's really good at playing a
amazing
good old bitch. So she's always been one of my favorites. So
I didn't even know that she had a survival story to tell.
I know. Well, it's a thing, like, I knew, like, I remember reading, like, probably 5 years ago when the show first came out, and I was like, she's hosting the show. And I was like, wow, that's, like, crazy. And then I was thinking about, like, what I wanted to do. And I was like, I should look that up. And I was like, oh my God, there's a whole episode on it. And I was like, well, I started watching it. I was like, holy shit, I need to, like, retell this.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
So come along with me, if you will, to San Diego in the summer of 1991.
Okay.
Were you born in 91 or 92?
92.
Okay. So you weren't born yet when this happened. I was just a wee babe. So Charisma Carpenter grew up and went to high school in San Diego. She describes it as being a surprisingly sleepy town with a very laid-back attitude and not very cosmopolitan at all. Furthermore, she says that going to the beach was very natural due to the surfing culture in San Diego, and it was where all the social gatherings were. So basically, the beach is where it was at.
Okay.
Anyone who was anyone was always down at the beach. She was 21 at the time in the summer of 91, having just moved out of her sister and brother-in-law's house. She had a lot of pride in how independent she was, something her mother had always admonished her for. She had also been recently selected to cheer for the San Diego Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what sport that is. Didn't look it up.
I feel like it's probably football.
I think it's maybe basketball.
Okay.
Like, it's, someone's going to be
why,
like,
why are we doing this?
Like, it's fucking
golf. It's golf.
It's curling.
It's curling.
It's definitely curling. But also at the time, she was working at the apartment complex in which she lived, working kind of as a leasing agent, showing units, collecting rent, and helping in with various move-ins and move-outs.
Okay.
However, shortly after she took the job, some strange things started happening. She kept having the sensation and also would hear noises that accompanied that, like, further that sensation that made her believe that someone was trying to break into her apartment.
Oh.
Into her apartment complex in general. She was somewhat comforted in the fact that she lived on the second floor of the building, which would be harder to gain entry to. But she also knew that her sliding glass doors, and apparently this was, like, throughout the entire complex, were on backwards. So they'd be very easy to remove.
Fuck.
Which also is, like,
Yeah, I mean,
why are they on backwards?
Oh my God.
Numerous times she was awakened in the night by the sounds of her doors and windows being rattled as if someone was trying to get in.
Oh no.
She would call out saying, "I hear you, go away."
Get it, girl.
Which I love. It's like, you're not fooling me. Get out. And each time she would get, when she would get out of bed and you know, try to get close enough to inspect the strange noises, there would be no one there. Through all this, she said she realized that she was feeling very, very paranoid and often would ask a friend to sleep on her couch or even would stay away from the apartment altogether.
Mm-hmm.
However, what she didn't know at the time was that she was not being paranoid.
Oh, God.
And that she was not the only one who was being preyed upon that summer in San Diego. So, smash cut two. 20-year-old Charmaine Agnos was a junior college student living with her father and stepmother at the time. She described herself as being carefree, albeit aimless at the time, spending most of her free hours rollerblading, bowling, and hanging out on the beach with friends. Like,
sounds fucking great.
Like, what a slice of the early 90s where it's like, I don't think there's internet.
Not really.
And if there is, it's like a fucking
dial up.
Yeah.
Not even dial up.
Like, the things that you spend the time doing are rollerblading, bowling, and going to the beach.
Amazing.
Like, sounds ideal, except as we have,
we don't go outside, but
we're both indoor recess sorts of kids.
Yeah,
but
for someone, it sounds really nice.
I mean, if there's like a sensible umbrella at the beach, I can fuck with that. A nice little chaise
indoor
lounge.
Rolling rink. I mean, yes, ooh.
Only if it was like walking distance from my house. So we are now, so it's July 3rd, 1991, down at Solana Beach. It's in the night times.
Mm-hmm.
Charmaine and her friends had planned a party in a segment of the beach known as Cherry Hill. A large group of them had convened per usual with a standard drinking and hanging out fare that consumed most of Charmaine and her friends' times. Charmaine and her boyfriend decided to walk south down the beach to create their own little small bonfire, just the two of them, at a location that was shielded from public view.
Sounds romantic, but also
I'm
scared because I know what's coming.
Not great. At this point, it was about 1:30 a.m. on the morning of the 4th of July. Charmaine said that she never had the sense that anyone was following or watching them until a stranger emerged directly from behind where they had set up camp.
Oh, God.
She said, "I had no idea there was anyone there until he was right on top of us."
No, sir.
Like, that is like somehow the scariest description. Cause obviously he wasn't like literally on top of them. He was just like behind them. But like something about being like
horrible,
not even realizing, like not having a sense like there's something off until there is a stranger directly upon you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Okay. I'd like to point out that slowly but surely Bailey's turtleneck is just like inching up further towards her hairline.
I'm going to talk. Is it nice if I talk through this?
Ooh, it's a little ASMR. The man was dressed in all black, was wearing a ski mask pulled over his head, and was brandishing a flashlight and a gun. Charmaine said at the time that she was more angry and scared and said that she yelled at the man or was thinking, like, how dare you? You know, this is my beach. This is where I hang out.
Lol.
This is where I grew up.
Yes, girl. Yes.
Cool. She and her boyfriend thought the man was just going to rob them, especially since the stranger asked them where their car keys were, to which Charmaine's boyfriend responded that they were in his pocket. However, instead, the man instructed them to stand up and move down the beach towards a set of caves.
Oh, no.
An even more isolated area than they were already in.
Caves?
Yeah.
This is not a good sign.
No, it's bad.
Oh, God.
Really bad. Towards which the only light that they could see, so they were at like, they were further down the beach, they had their own bonfire, and as this man's leading them toward the caves, aside from his flashlight, the only thing that is a source of light is the moon. So at this point, Charmaine said she began to get scared, realizing that if the man were to hurt them, as he began to threaten to, no one would be able to hear them scream.
Okay, perfect.
The man led the couple into one of the caves, instructing Charmaine to bind her boyfriend's hands and feet with a roll of duct tape that he had. She said the man didn't talk much, only when giving necessary orders, and that he seemed calm and convicted, almost as if he had done this before.
Oh, no.
Sorry, I should have given that a little bit of a trigger warning for this story.
Yeah.
Sorry. Too late.
Here we are.
Well, here's a trigger warning. If this sort of shit doesn't fly with you, skip ahead like 2 minutes. The man then took Charmaine at gunpoint back to a cave they had already passed, leaving her boyfriend behind.
Oh, no.
He ordered Charmaine to lie on her stomach and pull her t-shirt over her face. He then put the gun to her head, at which point Charmaine decided that all she wanted to do was live.
Oh,
so she told herself she would do anything the man asked her to do, especially when he became angry that he couldn't achieve an erection.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this is horrifying. I'm sorry.
Oh.
She thought to herself, if I'm nice to him, then he won't kill me. She said that in order to cope with what was happening, she began to dissociate and put herself in a different situation, summoning a sort of strength she never knew she had, especially as the man began to rape her.
Oh, God.
So I actually will say, like, this woman is so fucking brave and so fucking, like,
yeah,
like, I can't even imagine being in that horrible situation. I just think it's incredible. Like she, like, was, she, like, kind of, like, went into this, like,
yeah,
place where she was like, I want to live.
Uh-huh.
And I can't cry out for help, and I'm just gonna hope that I'm gonna do everything he says and hope that he doesn't kill me.
It's, yeah, like, and the thing about dissociating, I can't even imagine, but I think that's an incredible kind of coping mechanism. If it's the only thing that you can do to help yourself survive, like, that's,
yeah, you do what you need to,
so
do
strong
to survive. No, she's amazing. After he was finished, the man told Charmaine to run and tell her boyfriend to stay where he was, and then he took off. Charmaine ran screaming down the beach to find her boyfriend having just freed himself from his wrist restraints, which I was just like, ugh.
Oh, my God.
Put a mood a little bit faster, buddy. But at the same time, this guy had a gun.
Yeah.
Who knows what
for sure
would have happened. They both lived. So at
amazing,
the end of the day,
great.
That's kind of what matters.
Yeah.
So naturally, they ran for help, called the police, and Charmaine was taken to the hospital, upon where she learned that she was not the first victim to be attacked by this masked assailant, but was actually the latest in a string of serial rapes.
Oh, God.
According to Lieutenant Alicia Lampert of the San Diego PD, the man started out attacking single victims before moving on to couples, where the girlfriend would be raped in earshot of the boyfriend. This also is, like, very reminiscent of Golden State Killer.
Yeah.
Before you ask, it's not.
Yeah,
it's not.
It's,
I'm sorry.
Too late, yeah.
Well, I mean, he wasn't caught until recently, but it's not.
Yeah.
All of the victims had been young at the beach late at night and had been found or taken to remote spots. The next attack would be only 2 days later on July 6th, around 2 a.m., now, which would then send panic through the San Diego community because of how close it was to Charmaine's assault. The San Diego PD set up a task force to canvass the beach. However, only two weeks later, the serial rapist attacked again. This part sucks. This time attacking a 13 and 14-year-old couple.
Oh, my God.
Like...
Babies,
like true babies.
Oh, God.
Also, like, to try and paint a picture, like, this is a time, I think, residually from, I feel like the 80s is when there was, like, a, like, the panic of, like, kids getting kidnapped, but mm-hmm. still, like, I think I kind of blame the fact that, like, this is an internet, like, information isn't being spread the way it normally
for sure
was, and, but I can't imagine, you know, being 13, 14 out around the middle of the night, but it's not their fault. It's this piece of shit is to blame. The girlfriend, during the attack, the girl of the couple was raped twice during the attack, during which the man allegedly asked her if she was a virgin. When she answered affirmatively, he responded, "Well, you're not anymore."
Oh, my God. That.
Yeah.
No.
Sorry. That's the worst part. That's.
Oh, I fucking hate. I hate him
yeah.
so much.
Okay. So clearly this piece of shit was escalating.
Okay.
The police were horrified, but also stumped as to how this perp was able to seem to know exactly what areas to avoid and what to do to not get caught before or after the attacks. So they're, like, basically spinning their wheels, and they're like, yeah. What the fuck? This guy is clearly escalating. It's not good. He needs to be stopped. Back to charisma.
Okay.
Let's
girl.
Turn this ship around. I promise you, this is... I chose this to be an empowering story.
Yeah. I mean, obviously she survived and she thrived.
Yeah. And you know, in stories like this, sometimes things have to get bad before they can get better. That was the low point. We're now going to move on upwards. So around the same time, as I mentioned, Charisma Carpenter was becoming more and more convinced that someone was trying to break into her apartment. She began to set up booby traps with bar stools and pots and pans. So if someone did try to get in, it would create a large amount of noise and hopefully scare the guy away. Or at the very least, she would wake up and be able to call for help.
Mm-hmm.
This takes us to August 15th. Charisma was hanging out with her ex-boyfriend, Arthur, and their friend, Aldo, both of whom she had known since high school. Upon her suggestion, the three headed down to the beach, a choice that might seem a bit odd given the current events, but Charisma claims that she had no idea about the recent attacks.
Oh.
Which, again, like, she said that, and at first I was like, if this is, like, causing panic throughout San Diego, but And especially if she was already feeling paranoid. But at the same time, like, I don't think this was necessarily front page news.
And also, like, it's literally like you watch the local news or you get a newspaper. It's not like you get a CNN alert on your phone.
Exactly. And as I mentioned previously, the beach is, like, such a huge part of the culture. So mm-hmm. I think, like, the social culture. So I think that the concept going down to the beach was not... It wasn't the realm out of the realm of possibility. It wasn't be like if you and I were like hanging out, we're like, let's just go down to the beach. It'd be like,
we would literally never do that. And how long after the first attacks was this? So did you say?
I don't know when the first attacks were.
So the July 4th was
Charmaine. Was when Charmaine was attacked, and now this is about a month and a half later in mid-August.
Okay.
There's also a pretty good chance that the police were not, like, the press wasn't super involved mm-hmm. as a way of potentially trying to, like, not give out too much information about this guy. Who fucking knows? Unimportant. So around 11 p.m. on August 15th, the Charisma and her two friends headed down to Torrey Pines State Beach, where Charisma actually says that she acknowledged that she felt completely safe because there were a number of cars driving by on the nearby freeway and even noted seeing a cop car. So to give some kind of context, I'm not entirely sure, but I think it's kind of like this freeway goes right along the beach. Mm-hmm. So if they go down to the water, while they are out of the view of the light, they're just like a short walk back to the main road.
Okay.
Upon getting to the beach, Aldo and Arthur immediately stripped down to their underwear and ran into the water. Meanwhile, Charisma began to carefully disrobe by the guard tower so as not to get her clothes wet and sandy. As she took off her jeans and t-shirt, she heard a rustling from underneath the tower.
God, no.
At first, she thought it might be a homeless person taking refuge until a man in a ski mask stepped out of the shadows with a flashlight telling her to shut the fuck up.
Oh my God.
Terrifying. Upon noticing what was happening, Aldo and Arthur ran back out of the water, but it was so dark that it took them a moment to notice that the man that they were running towards had a gun. The three initially assumed that the man wanted to rob them because his first request was to ask the keys for their car, just as he did with Charmaine and her boyfriend, and also asked if they had any money or valuables. It was then that Arthur put two and two together and realized that this was the man that he had read about in the papers and that the three of them were alone on the beach with no one to call for help. Also, like, dear Arthur, if you, Charisma didn't know.
So you did know about it.
You did know. And maybe when Charisma's like, let's go to the beach, you could have been like, what if we went bowling? What if we went to a bar? Or like a diner.
Yeah.
Got some great disco fries.
What if we stayed inside forever?
Yeah. The two boys explained that all their belongings were down by the water, so the man ordered Aldo to go down and fetch the clothes. He then told Charisma to bind Arthur's hands with his belt. At this point, Charisma was flying into fight or flight mode and realized that if she fully tied his hands, she was going to be in real trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So she put the pin of the belt in the hole, but didn't pull the slack underneath, so it looked convincing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can kind of like picture like... like the kind of belt where it's like, like you pull it and it's like, it's not like a notch. It doesn't have notches. It's kind of just like a rope where it kind of just like slides in.
Okay.
So she tied it tight so it looked like it was fully restrained, but he was not.
Okay.
Meanwhile, as she was doing this, Arthur was able to realize what she was doing so that she was not fully binding him. And so he went along and kind of played like he pretended like he was fully restrained.
Yeah.
When the man directed Charisma to tie up Aldo's hands, she began to lose her calm, realizing how dangerous and defenseless of a situation she was in. So she started stalling and would say to the man, I can't do it. It's not working. You try it. You could do a better job.
Mm-hmm.
Again, just like biding some time.
Oh, my God.
However, this just pissed the man off more. So he put the gun to her head and said, I'm going to blow your head off if you don't do it.
Oh, my God. Also, like a really ballsy move to attack with a woman with two men, like
that's the thing with escalation. I mean,
yeah,
it's when, I mean, I'm not that I'm a trained like psychiatrist or like criminologist to understand it, but like from like reading I'll Be Gone in the Dark. So I'm now like, I'm an expert.
Right.
I think when like, usually, especially if it's like a sexually motivated attack in terms of achieving that level of power.
Yeah.
I think when you've done it before, it just becomes almost like, unfortunately, too easy. So you that's the thing why it escalates. I think that's why the Golden State Killer like started with a string of rapes. Then it was couples that were raped. And then it escalated to murder.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible.
God, okay.
Horrible, horrible, horrible. Upon which, when he put the gun to her head, Charisma asked him, what are you going to do? Are you going to rape me? To which he replied, you bet your sweet ass I am.
Oh, I am done with this fucking pervert.
I know you were so excited when I started telling the story. But trust me, it's mm-hmm. worth it. However, realizing that Charisma wasn't cooperating, the man gave her the flashlight and told her to go sit by Arthur while he tied Aldo's hands. Dumbass move, but like, okay. Good he did it. At this point, Arthur realized that this was his chance to do something, having slipped out of the belt that was binding his hands, and noticed that the man no longer had his hands directly on the gun. Mm-hmm. However, while he was trying to tie Aldo's hands, the man was also staring directly at Arthur and Charisma. Mm-hmm. So Arthur had to wait until the man dropped his gaze before lunging at him, mm-hmm. which he did.
Oh, my God.
So he charges the man, at which point the man grabs the gun and shoots Arthur. But Arthur still knocks into him, spinning him around in a half circle. Aldo, who is now free since the man wasn't completely binding him, also begins to attack the man, hitting him from one side while Arthur takes the other. However, within the struggle, the man is able to keep control of the gun and shoots Aldo in the stomach.
Oh, no.
Arthur and the man continue to struggle as Arthur collapses, and Arthur now realizes that he might have to kill the man in order to keep himself and Charisma safe.
Oh, my God.
And through this whole thing, this man is incredible because also, like, during the entire time as he's recounting this, he says that when the man first approached them, all he could think about, he was like, I don't care what happens to me, I'm going to make sure my friends get out of this alive.
Oh my God.
Which is like such an incredible thing to like,
yeah.
Very selfless. So now in this moment, he's just like, there's a very good chance I need to kill this stranger.
Yeah.
So that he doesn't rape my friend murder all of us. Charisma, who was witnessing this, was paralyzed by fear and unsure what to do. However, she decided to run up towards the freeway to try and flag down some help. Mm-hmm. She sees a row of parked cars when she gets up towards the freeway and starts banging on windows. Mm-hmm. Back down on the beach, Arthur and the man continue to fight for control of the gun, with shots going off amidst the struggle. Eventually, the man gets the upper hand, but surprisingly, as he does, tells Arthur that if he wants to live, he should run.
What?
Mm-hmm. So Arthur takes off towards the rocks at the edge of the beach, zigzagging to avoid getting shot, upon which he realizes that there is a bullet hole in his chest.
Oh, my God.
It's like, it's crazy. So I think that, like, from what I gauge of this total asshole, while he had other things, he was, like, other things on his mind, he didn't want to kill anyone.
Yeah.
And that the gun was really there just for power. So mm-hmm. I think once he was in a scenario where he got the control of the gun again, he was like, I don't want to kill you, yeah. So, like, you better fucking run.
What about the other guy?
I'll get to that.
Okay.
So, Charisma, who is actually right now, Charisma, who is still trying to flag down help, finds Aldo lying in a prone position, critically injured. I believe prone is facing down.
Okay.
I think it's prone and supine, whatever. Okay. Doesn't matter. As she tries to help him up, she noticed that he is saying his Hail Marys, obviously believing he is going to die.
Oh my God.
Despite seeing how much blood he is losing, Charisma holds him, tells him to stay strong, stay awake, and keep fighting. Mm-hmm. At this point, a still-shot Arthur catches up to Charisma and Aldo, ordering her to give him the flashlight so he can go back down to the beach and find their car keys, which miraculously he does.
Oh my God.
Which is also, like, insane within, yeah. like, the struggle. And also, you're on a fucking beach. You're able to, like, find your keys.
Yeah, you're also shot in the chest.
Yeah, no big deal.
Okay.
He eventually gets back to the Jeep, and he and Charisma struggle to get Aldo in, who has become very heavy and limp from the blood loss. Mm-hmm. So Arthur tells him, Aldo, if you don't get yourself into the Jeep, you are going to die. And somehow this is inspiring enough that Aldo is able to help him, like, help hoist himself inside. As they take off in the Jeep, Arthur somehow is driving, while Charisma sits in the back with Aldo, coaxing him to stay awake. But he starts passing out, saying over and over, I'm dying, I'm dying.
Oh, my God.
They eventually make it to a gas station, where Arthur hobbles inside, in only his underwear, covered in blood, screaming for the attendant to call 911.
Oh, my God.
However, the attendant was so shocked at the sight that Arthur himself had to make the call.
Cool.
Like, cool. I mean, I will say, like, it would be pretty fucking yeah. shocking to be like, but I think the words call 911 are pretty fucking self-explanatory.
Right.
Like, just pick up the goddamn phone.
Because they don't have fucking cell phones.
Mm-hmm. This is 1991. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have that car phone.
Yeah.
Thankfully, the ambulance arrived shortly after. The phone call was made, taking the wounded Arthur and Aldo and the traumatized Charisma to the hospital. Luckily, the gunshot wound in Arthur's chest had only hit muscle, but Aldo was in critical condition. The bullet had entered his side, broken his ribs, and lodged in his liver.
Oh, God.
He had lost almost all of his blood. So when he was rushed to surgery, They had to fix up whatever was torn in the wound at the time and had to leave the bullet where it was.
Oh my God. Like, oh God.
The story is mind-boggling and it gets crazier.
Okay.
So while the boys were in surgery, Charisma was being interviewed by the detectives, being told that she and her friends were heroes by fighting off the serial rapist attack. However, all she could think about was how desperately she wanted to take a shower to wash off all of her friend's dried blood that was all over her.
Yeah.
Like, poor girl. But also, like, she is a hero. They're all heroes. Yeah. Like, they, like, and that's what I was going to say earlier was, while it's like, oh my God, like, why would they fucking go down to the beach? It's like, if they hadn't, like, the next part wouldn't have happened. Mm-hmm. Which was that 10 miles south at UC San Diego Medical Center, another man was being treated for gunshot wounds to the hand and to the ear.
Mm-hmm.
Because all those gunshots were going off in that struggle.
Yeah.
So naturally, he was going to get hit.
Yep.
And turns out, the individual was identified as a man named Henry Hubbard, a San Diego police officer.
Fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Upon being treated, he explained that his car had stalled on the freeway and that he'd been jumped by three Hispanic males and that they had shot him.
Uh-huh.
However, the doctor was suspicious because his story didn't quite match up with the evidence, specifically that his clothing was covered with beach sand.
Uh-huh.
Furthermore, when Charisma presented the flashlight she had been given by the assailant on the beach, it was discovered that it was a police-issued black Maglite flashlight with Hubbard engraved on its side.
Oh, honey.
Like,
oh, honey.
Might as well have given her, like, the literal smoking gun.
Here's my ID.
All of the other victims in the other cases had also described the flashlight being a crucial aspect in their attack.
Mm-hmm.
With this evidence, Henry Hubbard was arrested, although initially he denied that he was the rapist and that they had the wrong man.
Uh-huh.
Like,
sure. Is another police officer Hubbard who looks exactly like me.
Sure.
I'm telling you.
Charmaine Agnos, as well as the other victims, were brought down to the police precinct for a voice identification lineup. Since obviously during her attack, she didn't see the perpetrator's face because he was wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm.
She was told by the detectives that she could write down whatever she would like the suspects to say. So she wrote down the phrase, "Shut up, you smart ass."
Yeah.
Because that was something he had said to her that always stuck with her.
Yeah.
They went down the lineup, and once Hubbard said the line, Charmaine knew right away it was him, feeling an instant overwhelming sense of relief that her rapist had been caught.
Wow.
Like, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
So, naturally, being a police officer in San Diego at the time, Hubbard knew all about the police stakeouts, when they were being conducted, where they were being conducted, who was involved, etc., because he was a part of the precinct briefings.
Oh my God.
He knew his colleagues were looking for him, and yet he didn't stop.
That's unreal.
It's like,
that's like a movie.
I know. Well, like, I've heard like this, like, I feel like I've seen like a couple like Law and Order SVU episodes where it's like, it's a cop. But
oh,
like,
my
you
God.
Like hear him out having real, because it's, he was literally getting all of the information needed to avoid getting
that's
caught.
That's crazy.
But also knew that like his colleagues and friends were looking for him and still was just like, I'm going to keep on.
There's something really wrong with that
total,
person.
Total piece of shit. The police, the public, and the victims themselves were in absolute shock upon the arrest. Hubbard was a model policeman, having graduated at the top of his class at the police academy. And because he had so many outstanding qualities, no one, not even Hubbard himself, realized the monster that lay beneath the surface. That's a horrible line that I wrote. Hubbard eventually admitted that he couldn't understand his compulsion to do what he did due to the fact that he loved being a police officer and always sought to protect the safety of the public.
Like,
who fucking cares? There was speculation that he had a lot of pent-up rage, obviously, in that his father was extremely violent and verbally abusive towards his mother, mm-hmm. especially in regards to sex. I don't really know what that means.
Okay. I mean, a lot of people who had a tough childhood don't fucking become a serial rapist. So.
Exactly. So, not an excuse. You fucking asshole. And so having overheard these arguments as a child, there's a possibility that he used his trauma to fuel his attacks. But I wrote in all caps, who cares? Like, I feel like in a lot of these scenarios, we try to find like a rational, like a reason, oh, like why they do what they did. And at some point it's like, cause they're a bad person.
Yeah. Cause there's a lot of people who get to that place where they're incredibly full of rage and hatred and they feel like they want to do something. And you know what they do is they don't do that
mm-hmm.
to other people because they have empathy for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been
a lot of stuff has been like psychoanalysis with Grant Bailey. This is like the creepiest part to me. Upon the revelation of his identity, Charisma Carpenter realized that Hubbard not only lived in her apartment complex.
Oh my God.
He was, in fact, one of her tenants. So he had...
I forgot about that part.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, when I was watching the episode, I was like, okay, like, this is just, like, setting the scene. Like, she was feeling scared, and then she got attacked later, so it, like, just try and link it to make it, like, beef up the story. Nope. He had been conducting background checks on her and had been stalking her prior to the attack.
Fuck.
So it was not a random... This was not a random attack. He probably followed them to the beach that night because he wanted to... Yep. She was in his sights.
Mm-hmm. Great. Bye.
Turn your sliding glass doors around. Hubbard was tried and convicted and was sentenced to 56 years, but with the option of 27.5 with good behavior, which just doing the math could mean he'd be scheduled for release in 2020.
Great. I love when we're super lenient with hardcore criminals.
Yeah. So just kind of wrap the story up with something a little bit, some more positive, just like updates. Both Aldo and Arthur survived. So
yep.
This is a rare case, I'm telling, where no one died.
Great.
Aldo spent a lot of time in the ICU following the shooting, but has since recovered. Arthur said the incident left him traumatized and directionless. He started drinking heavily and hanging out with the wrong kinds of people, partaking in any sort of behavior that would help him forget that night. However, he says that he turned his life around once he had his daughter, and in reflecting on the incident, he said he would fight like he did that night for just about anybody.
Oh.
And in the episode, there's a really sweet scene where, like, he and Charisma, like, go back to the beach.
Oh, my God.
And, like, for the first time. And she's like, I realize I've never said thank you. And he's basically like, there's no need to thank me. Like, I would do it again.
Oh, my God.
Charmaine says that her rape didn't break her, but instead empowered her. And that she wouldn't be who she is today had she not been attacked.
Oh, my God.
So at least there's something positive about that.
Thank God you are who you are today, because you're amazing.
And Charisma echoed that statement, saying, and quote, I am a fighter, I am a survivor, and I don't take my safety for granted. However, I've had a lot of love and a lot of good things happen that I feel outshine that event in such a way that it makes it possible to carry on.
Oh, amazing.
So if you want to see, there's more information in the episode that I didn't feel like necessarily including. It's truly season one, episode one of Surviving Evil. Mm-hmm. It's on the Investigation Discovery site for free, the episode one, Terror Beach.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That was so good. I loved that. I mean, it was not good. It was terrifying and horrible, but like, I had no idea.
Yeah. It's a story that we haven't really like touched on, like kind of surviving sexual assault, and we have touched upon it, but like I was worried that, you know, and again, I apologize if anything that, if there's some sort of trigger warning, we can maybe include a trigger warning in when we post this on social media and whatnot. But I think it's just the reason it stuck with me and I felt like it was important to tell was the fact that the victims survived and they fought back when they could and they were able to carry on. And it seems like, you know, at least with Charmaine and Charisma, that they don't regret that it happened, that it helped them become the badass bitches that they are. So, And let's just hope that Henry Hubbard does not get released in prison, and maybe do some more fucking background checks before we let people into the police academy.
Honestly, amazing. Wow. That's truly inspiring. Okay. Well, again, here we are, ready for a bitch session, I guess. Just to be real petty, as we've said, it's like, you know, Halloween was last week, and for the entire month of October, I was like giving myself a free pass for just kind of eating candy at all hours of the day every day, just because it was like, it's Halloween, and it's like, well, Halloween's one day, but sure. Eat sugar for the entire month of October. And I've just been feeling really bad. Like, I just have not been feeling good. And it's clearly that's why. Because I literally, like my complaint is the fact that sugar is as addictive as it is. And there have literally been mornings where I've, like, woken up and been like, oh, my God, I, like, need candy right now. Like, as soon as I start having it, my body demands it at all hours of the day. And I'm going to have to do this again, but I quit eating sugar cold turkey like 2 years ago.
Wow.
Like didn't eat any sugar for a month. And I literally was having like withdrawal.
Oh my God.
Like I was having like the worst headaches. Like I felt horrible for the first week. Like I was craving it so fucking badly. And then after that, it was like, I fucking broke it. Like wow. I finally like got over it. And the fact that it's like basically a drug is so, it's just so terrible. And there's so many foods that we eat that have so much sugar in them. And especially Halloween candy, which I think everyone knows, but I did it myself. So
yeah.
Next time you hear from me, I might be trying not to eat sugar and I might be super irritable. Like who knows, but that's mine.
No, I hear you. I've never had too much of a sweet tooth, but I do enjoy like a lot of sugary things.
Yeah.
My complaint is actually kind of tangentially similar, which is that, so I've had fluctuating weight my entire life. It's just been like, it's in my genes or it's just like in my habits. I don't know what it is.
Same.
And I'm at a point where, so I kind of, I feel like I've had like three like large weight spikes in my life. And the two that I'm more, the most recent are one was when I was in college, and one was in grad school. I think it was a lot of it was like stress related where I was taking my stress out, you know, not the best eating habits and honestly not some of the best like drinking habits. Just and I post undergrad, the weight kind of like fell off really quickly because I was 22 and like, I just like started eating dinner at 5 p.m. and like didn't snack and like the, and I started working out more and the weight just fell off. Whereas now I'm at a point where like, I feel like I've changed everything in my like life to better myself and like eating better and drinking less and like all this stuff. And like the weight is just like staying on. And it's just like, it's a simultaneous of two things. Like one, it's annoying because I'm like, I would love to lose like a bunch of weight and I'd love to be like thinner. But at the same time, like I've been thinking a lot about what makes me happy and like, do like crash diets make me happy? Abso-fucking-lutely not. Does like feeling like I need to work out every single day make me happy? Absolutely not. And I'm trying to just, I guess this really isn't so much a complaint. My complaint is that like, I wish I were skinny, but at the same time, even when I have been my thinnest, I wasn't happy with my body. And I'm trying to have a different outlook and try and think, okay, you know, I'm going to work out because it's healthy and it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And like, if I make it to the gym four times a week, 1 week, great. And if it's twice or zero the next week, because like that's wasn't making me happy, great. Yeah. And if I'm going to have a burger because I want a burger, I'm going to do it.
Good.
So I don't know.
I feel the same way. And I've like, I have like the weirdest like workout habits and I can't get into a routine that I like, which is why like every time, like I always talk about all these like weird classes that I take on this podcast and I'll get really into something for like 3 months and then I'll be like, okay, actually I don't want to do this anymore. And like, I think two of the biggest things that have like really helped me is when I, like a few years ago, I signed up for a 10K, which is like 6.2 miles. And literally I had maybe run like two miles ever in my life at one time. And that was like such a kick in the butt for me where I was like, I'm going to train for this and I'm like going to do it well. Mm-hmm. And I started just like, I got to the point where I could just casually run 5 miles, which is like maybe not a big deal for a lot of people, but was like a huge deal
to me.
And I felt like really, really good when I was at the time when I was doing that. And I still do run semi-regularly, although not usually 5 miles at a time. But then another thing is I just also realized that I really love walking and like we live in a super walkable city. And I think like for a long time I was like, this is not like, this doesn't count as working out. This doesn't count as anything. But it's like, if I like walk 45 minutes from my house to work, like that's a lot of activity to do in a day. And it makes me so much happier to like walk through a part of Brooklyn that I really like with like a podcast on in my ears and just like fucking enjoy the morning with like an iced coffee in my hand. Like, and no, I'm not like working out, but I'm being active and it has like really improved like my mood for the rest of the day and things like that. And I think like, there's just no reason to like feel bad that you're not as intense as some other people are. Like I have a lot of friends who are like to like run marathons. It's like, cool. That's great for you. Like that's not going to be me because I just don't enjoy it. I don't for the most part really enjoy working out, but there are always things that you can do that you you can find that you actually really do like, and mm-hmm. I think can make a huge difference, or even a small difference is also exactly. great.
Yeah. Long story short, I just think that in approaching 2019, I feel like every year I've been like, oh, I want to lose 10 pounds. I want to lose 20 pounds. Like, blah, 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 blah. I'm just trying to think more about like, okay, like I want to feel good.
Yeah.
And maybe that means not eating candy. And maybe that means
really does.
That means for you, like cutting out carbs, cutting out dairy, drinking less, drinking more water, like whatever it is, just do it in the pursuit of feeling better, not necessarily looking better or prescribing to like be a certain whatever.
The I think it also helps
like
matter.
Exactly. And I think also now I'm like rapidly approaching 30 or like 30 is closer than 20. I'm like, I guess it's kind of like, I'm like, well, my body isn't going to bounce back the way it does.
Right.
And also I don't feel the pressure to look like I did when I was like 21, 22. Cause like, it's like, who was I really trying to impress?
Yeah. Who's looking like, I am. And you look amazing, honey. Always.
Thank you. Well, it's, I think also once I realized that like, I wasn't going to be a twink and said, if I just like leaned more towards becoming like a little more dad bod and like bear.
You're such a bear and it's the best.
So like, it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Okay.
Anyways, I feel like we like started in this episode with some like real like
we had some causes we needed to bring up. We had some advice we were going to give that no one asked for.
That's what we're here for.
That's what we did. Anyway, thank you guys so much for listening. As always,
Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. You can find us on Twitter and other forms of social media like Instagram.
Just the two.
At RWF Podcast or rwfpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your, hey, that scared the shit out of me, and other spooky suggestions of the sort. Go see Halloween. Support older actors in cinema. Mm-hmm. Also, Jamie Lee Curtis looks fucking incredible.
Love her.
By the way, I meant to add, there's been a slew of like really amusing things where people are like being like, oh shit, I need to get that Activia, like whatever it's doing.
It's
like,
Activia.
And that's on that great. Note,
bye bitches.